I mean, there were years where this mine was doing over 1 million ounces of production a year. So what I like about this is it's got a history of production. So again, you know what your rock competency is, you know what your metallurgy is, you know what the geology is, and we're still finding mineralization. And this is a big, iconic system. And again, it was just underinvested over the last 10 to 15 years. But the infrastructure was well maintained, and we want to leverage that to achieve our strategy of filling the mill. But we think we can extend the mine life for multi decades. That's our objective.
Good day, everybody. Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. And today I am joined by Jonathan Odd, Executive Chair of Hemlo Mining. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here, and good to see you so soon after the Rick Rule conference.
Yeah, the Rick Rule Symposium was quite great. It's been about 2 months since I last saw you, and it was great to meet you there. But for those of us who may be new to Hemlo, if you can give us your website, your ticker, where you're trading for us.
Sure. The symbol is HMMC in Toronto. We trade on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And we also trade on the OTCQX under the symbol HMMCF. We are going to be pursuing a full US listing on the NYSE American in December of this year.
Well, that's big news, Jonathan. We'll be on the lookout for that. But before we start, if you can just give us the big picture, if you want to give us what you think you have, where are you, and where are you trying to take things?
Sure. So just I guess maybe a high level for those that are new to the story. We acquired the Hemlo Gold Mine from Barrick in September of 2025. We closed the transaction on the 26th of November, and we started trading on the TSX on December 2nd. What is Hemlo, and why did Barrick choose to sell this mine? Because we get asked that question quite a lot. It's an iconic Canadian mine. It's produced over 25 million ounces of gold since 1985. And the former president and CEO of Barrick really wanted Barrick to have larger, what he called tier one and tier two assets. And that was Mark Bristow, a tier one asset being 500,000 ounces of gold production a year, or tier two asset being 350,000 ounces of gold a year. So Hemlo, at the time that we acquired it, was producing around 140,000 ounces a year. So it was too small for Barrick to really dedicate time and resources to it. And in fact, a very good friend of mine, business partner, mentor, Bob Quartermain, who's on Rick Rule's Living Legends, and has had a remarkable career. He was there for the, two of the three discoveries in the early 80s. And he received a phone call from Mark Bristow in April of 25. And then Bob called me and said, "Hey, do you want to lead a team to buy this thing?" Because at that time, Barrick had chosen to run a process and sell the asset.
So, Jonathan, you guys bought a past producing mine. So, if you can just verify what stage you are and how should people think about Hemlo?
Yeah, so we are producing right now. So last year in 2025, the mine produced around 140,000 ounces. We're on pace to do, kind of in that 135 to 150,000 ounces of production this year. But our strategy is very simple. The mill nameplate capacity of the mill is 10,000 tons per day. However, the mill is permitted to do 13,500. Current capacity for the nameplate, so current capacity on 10,000 tons, we're doing 3,800 tons per day. So it's at 38% capacity. So when you look at what it's permitted for, what it's currently operating at is 28% of capacity. Our strategy is simple. I didn't say it was easy. It's a simple strategy to fill the mill over the next 2.5 to 3 years. So what we're doing this year, we're investing $130 to $140 million US dollars into the business. We've ordered 21 pieces of new equipment. We've made some tweaks and refurbishments to the mill. We phased out the contract miner, so we are back to being an owner operator. We've made significant changes to the senior operating team. We've paid down $75 million in debt already. And we've embarked on one of the largest exploration programs in all of Canada, or North America for that matter, at 130,000 meters of drilling this year. And everything we're doing this year is designed at updating and coming out with a new life of mine technical report in September of 27, which will encompass all of the drilling that we have done. And our objective is to show the market that, this is a mine that can produce a lot more than 140,000 ounces of gold a year for a lot more than 14 years. And I say those two numbers, 140,000 ounces a year and 14 years, because Barrick had commissioned a PFS in August and September of 25 as they were selling the asset to try to put some kind of pin in the valuation. So we think we can fill the mill, ultimately fill the mill, and sustain that for over two decades.
Is the market pricing that in, or do you think they're underestimating just how long this thing can go?
So, Steve, the last site visit that Barrick conducted prior to selling this asset was September 11th, 2001.
That's a long time. I know that date very well.
We all do, unfortunately. So, no, Steve, the market is not pricing in our fill-the-mill strategy. We hosted a site visit. We had analysts up, investors, and all of our lenders. And I think people came away with a really positive, very constructive tone, where it might take a little bit more time for us to fill the mill, but the ounces are there. It's a massive endowment. I think that's one of the key takeaways, is that this is a really big gold system. And, you know, Barrick did little, you know, Barrick invested very little in exploration. We're drilling more this year than Barrick has in the last 10. So the market is not pricing that in. For us to be able to fill the mill and sustain that for 20 years, you're in the top 10 gold mines in Canada. And, you know, because we're in this inflationary environment, you look at the replacement cost to build a mine like Hemlo in today's, like today, it's probably between $2.5 and $3 billion. US. Our market cap is 2.4 Canadian.
Where would you say is the biggest, closest comp that you can give us? And if you can just give us your neighbors, or who are your comps?
That's a very good question. Because we are a single asset company, there's only one other single asset company in Canada that has one mine. Now, it's a bigger company. It's a bigger asset in terms of production. And that's Artemis, the Blackwater asset in British Columbia that Stephen Dean has done a marvelous job of building and ramping up in a phased approach. You know, that's probably flirting with three times the market cap of Hemlo. I think another story that we get compared to would be a Discovery Silver, you know, run by Tony Makuch. Absolutely will be in the Hall of Fame. He was Kirkland Lake Gold, emerged with Agnico, Lakeshore Gold. This is a guy that has done nothing but make money for his investors. He bought the Porcupine mine from Newmont when Newmont was running a process last year. Even though that's more of a complex where you've got four deposits, it's still considered sort of a single asset story. They've got an asset in Mexico that I don't know what they're doing with. And that's flirting with a three times our market cap as well. So I think that's the upside for the story. Now we have to execute. You know, the biggest challenge that the entire industry is facing, and I talked about this when I saw you a few months ago, are people. You know, there's been massive under enrollment in geology and engineering programs. So the pipeline of the next generation of geologists and engineers, it's smaller than it historically has been. So we're investing more time in training people. When Jason Kosick, our CEO, goes to site, He makes himself available. He mentors. We've got 30 summer students that are now in the process of going back to school. We've got to still hire another 100 people over the next 2 years to be able to fill our mill.
I don't remember if this is the correct number, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think for whatever reason, the number 100 comes to mind. I don't know if that's just memory or what, but you had to hire a lot more people. It's kind of wasn't the bottleneck, but it was a goal that you guys had in mind to reach your goals here. Like, how's all that gone since we talked? I know that you brought mining in-house, as you talked about, the goal for increased production. How are things looking?
Look, I would say that people are still the biggest challenge, because it's very competitive. Buy side, investors are now paying for growth. They want you to do that in a disciplined and a responsible way. So, I would say it's going really well, but it's kind of like two or three steps forward, one step back, where you hire 20 people in a month, and then the next month you might lose net five. And then so it's just like a really focused, collaborative effort to expand our workforce and to do it, methodically. And work safety is very important to us. So, it's something that I think I think the prize is bigger than we thought when we bought the mine. Because we phased out the contract miner. So their last day was March 15th. Okay, so we've only had this mine as owner operator for like 4 months. So, I think we've kind of level set with the analysts in the street as to what our costs will. There's an inflection point where our costs will start to come down as we ramp up our tons. So, as we've stated publicly and in disclosure and our press releases, we want to exit this year at 4,800 tons per day. So we bought the mine, it was doing around 38. So over a 12 to 15 month period, go from 38 to 48, and then to exit 27 at 6,000 tons per day. So 6,000 tons per day is around 200,000 ounces. Now, how we go from 6,000 to 10,000 tons per day, we're doing as a part of that 2027 new technical report, new life of mine study. It will incorporate the results of the open pit trade-off study. So there's a significant resource in the open pit. We're going to look at, do we incur a lot of capital to lay back, or do we sterilize some of the ounces and bulk it from underground? And that's how we go from 6,000 to 10,000 tons per day. 10,000 tons per day is between 250 and 300,000 ounces. Now, if the permitted amount for the mill gets filled, the mill is permitted to do 13,500 tons per day. If you fill the mill, that's over 300,000 ounces a year. Not one analyst is giving us any credit for that. So the infrastructure's there, the endowment's there. So we're alleviating some of the choke points within the mine, vent raises, additional development. In this year, a lot of our drilling and our production stopes, they're competing. So we're alleviating congestion, but it's just we've got a year of investment. We've told the street that Q2, Q3 are our heavy capital months, so your costs are going to be higher, your AISC's going to be higher, and your free cash flow is going to be lower. But in saying that, we've still been able to pay down almost $90 million in debt this year while investing in the business, while hiring, while buying all the equipment.
Going back to your analyst not giving you enough credit for that, why aren't they giving you credit? Like, is there something they want to see? What's the holdup?
Look, I actually agree with the approach because it's a more conservative approach. Okay. So when we bought the asset, there was relatively limited disclosure and limited known about the mine. So really, it was when the analysts came up to site. We had all of the analysts that cover us and one that doesn't cover us came up to site, and they were blown away with the condition of the infrastructure, the size of the infrastructure. But then I think most importantly, the size of the prize, the continuity of the ore body, and the endowment. And this is not being promotional. Like there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that Barrick left us. We've already made a new discovery. We're finding mineralization, everywhere, and all of the gold that we're adding is above the lowest point in the mine. So your infrastructure is already in place. And then I think one of the things that's also quite exciting, you'll start to see disclosure around some of the regional exploration work that we're doing, which is really exciting. This is a very large land package. It's 47,000 hectares. And after this year, we're going to start to step out and follow up on some of the really compelling data that Barrick left us with.
So I want to go back to you talking about, I think you mentioned you're hoping to cash flow in 2027. Is that right?
So we're
And
already free cash flowing right now.
you are.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. As I said, we paid down, we had a principal payment a few weeks ago, and then we chose to pay down $75 million in debt in late Q1.
Okay.
So we paid down roughly $90 million in debt this year.
Okay.
Okay.
So what's next? Is the focus primarily on exploration while increasing ore production? And how's the, I know you said you mentioned doing a lot more exploration than Barrick's done in the years past. If you can tell me just kind of what's next and what are you trying to prove?
Look, right now the sole focus is to, as quickly but as safely as we can, ramp up from 38 to 48, which is end of this year, and then 48 to 6. So there's one, predominant focus, which is to get back to 6,000 tons per day, a couple hundred thousand ounces a year, but invest in the business, provide a platform and a foundation for long-term success. Steve, when I was on there a lot, we don't want to be a single asset company. Okay. When you look at companies like G Mining or Orla, we want to grow, we want to build. Being a single asset company, there are pros and cons to it, but we haven't even begun to extract the value out of Hemlo. I mean, there were years where this mine was doing over 1 million ounces of production a year. So what I like about this is it's got a history of production. So again, you know what your rock competency is. You know what your metallurgy is. You know what the geology is, and we're still finding mineralization. And this is a big, iconic system. And again, it was just underinvested over the last 10 to 15 years, but the infrastructure was well maintained, and we want to leverage that to achieve our strategy of filling the mill. But we think we can extend the mine life for multi-decades. That's our objective.
So Jonathan, two questions. One is are you looking for other gold mines? Are you looking for other mines in Ontario? Do you have any kind of criteria that kind of fits the company ethos and strategy? And then secondly, how do you extend a mine life for that long for people who are new? Just why is there such a big discrepancy between what's expected and extending the mine life, and why do you think your number is correct?
Sure. A couple of great questions. So look, I think consistent with Hemlo, our entire team, our entire senior team, from operations to exploration to capital markets and building a financial model, and we need to have a strong view technically that the next asset we purchase or merge with, we don't really want to build at this time because we're in this sort of massive inflationary environment for mining. We have to have a very strong view technically about an asset. So when you have input from Bob Quartermain, lead director, Audra Walsh, our lead technical director, I mean, she's amazing. Jason, who I don't think gets enough credit from the street, that's Jason Kosik, our CEO. John Case, who used to run Money, Eric Trombley, who built Canadian Malartic, Canada's second largest gold mine, Raphael Duteau, our VPX. We need to have input from our senior team, and it needs to be aligned. And we have a very open, communication policy where it's more of a meritocracy. It's not a dictatorship, kind of like Ray Dalio's principles. We do when we are ready, provided that we are all aligned on a particular opportunity. Our preference would be Canada. Our preference would be somewhere proximal to where Hemlo is, but that would not preclude us from looking at, at Canada, US, and that's probably the extent of where we would look. Why do I think we're right? Because it's just spending the time to put together all the data and investing in the business and actually having focus, walking before you run, simple concepts. Quartermain is, again, I've friend, business partner, mentor. He's always been about extreme focus and attention to detail. So Silver Standard, which was a massive win for Rick Rule and Rick Rule's investors, that went from $2.5 million to $2.5 billion. Pretium, which is sort of the gold standard in my opinion for buying an asset, making a new discovery, getting all your IBAs done, economics, raising the dough, permitting to Goldport under 7 years. He may have been on one other board, so extreme
No.
focus. And as executive chair of this company, that's what I push and sort of demand of our team. It's a tough enough business. It's 24/7. It can be thankless. But in my opinion, there are very few people that can do multiple things at once and do them well. You have to have a massive team. And so I really push and challenge the team, but the data is we're still finding nuggets of information, and we think that can be managed with the right focus and capital and time. But the data is there, and that's what's so exciting for us is that the infrastructure is in great condition. You're fully permitted. You're on Ontario Hydro. You're off the highway. Rock competency is amazing. So, and there's, we haven't even really begun to start to implement, kind of ways to optimize it. There's a lot of synergies we have. So that's kind of the next phase. And that's also, kind of why I'm excited, but it's a massive geological footprint. And when Mark Bristow, who I've done two transactions with, bought all the assets for Dakota Gold, which is a $1 billion company, in South Dakota out of their closure group for in the Homestake District, which Bob is the chairman of. It's something where just taking the time and being methodical and then having a strong view with conviction and working like hell to make it happen.
John, the last time we spoke, you and I talked about it being a show me story. I mean, I think you like outperformed many other juniors or gold in many regards, but people not still not getting it. So like, what's it going to take for you to show them? Do you have certain metrics? Do you expect certain things to kind of re-rate? I mean, what do you think it is going to take?
Yeah, so as of last or half an hour ago, I checked, so I didn't want to misquote. So we're up like 54% this year to date, and the GDXJ is up about 14 or 13 and a half. So I think when we bought the asset, there was a view that the team overpaid, and there's a view that this was a tired and mature asset that there's no way they could fill the mill. So that's fine. That motivates me even more. And you just let the outcomes and your performance dictate, and that kind of shuts people up. So there's no fatal flaws. Again, it just because this was an asset that was the smallest asset in Barrick's portfolio for a lot of years, a lot of analysts didn't even have a number in there, or they put like a low number in there just so there would be some kind of valuation. So it's just, again, under promise, over deliver, head down, focus, build the business. And when we meet fund managers and analysts, they're kind of blown away and they still think it's cheap. I mean, right now we're trading at like 0.4 times NAV. Some of our competitors are trading at 1 times NAV. So I'm fine with that because we have this ramp up that maybe it takes an extra quarter or two, but I'd rather be conservative and head down and under promise, over deliver, and have our shareholders handsomely rewarded. So I'm fine. You've got likely GDXJ inclusion this month. NYSE American in December. We'll have a whole plethora of drill results, the next Q. But really, I think what the market wants to see is that 2027 life of mine technical study. And then I think that's going to make Jason and our entire senior team look really, really good. So I also we also had the opportunity to collaborate with Wheaton and Orion on due diligence when we bought the asset. And so both Wheaton and Orion, we kind of looked at the asset in a similar way. And because our approach was informed by looking at the data, by being familiar with the data. I mean, Bob was here 40 years ago. Bob had tried to acquire this mine about a decade ago. So having that familiarity, having that commercial sense where you let data dictate how we allocate capital, it just made it easier for us to really go after the asset. And there were other companies that were in the final round. And the bid-ask spread on our winning number and fourth place was like $30 million. So we took a very strong view, and so far the asset's showing that it's got a lot more to give and offer. So I'm not worried about, a lot of the noise. Again, I'd rather have a slow and steady than the stock to go up and double in a month and then, pull back 50%, right?
Jonathan, I want to ask you about share structure. If you can just give me a brief history or what it looks like right now, and then in particular, I'm curious about your skin in the game or the insiders, what that consists of, and do you have any institutions that are worth mentioning here?
Yeah, so right now there's 296 million shares out. The stock is trading at about $8 Canadian. We've got about $125 to $130 million in the bank and about $135 or so million dollars in debt. Biggest shareholders we have Fidelity, Wellington, T. Rowe, VanEck, Franklin, Merck, Connor Clark and Lund. Those are the largest shareholders we have. As for me personally, and then I'll speak on behalf of the management team, I've got over $25 million of my own money into the deal. And I own roughly just over 4.5% of the company. And I'm only on one board. I believe in extreme focus. And management in total has just over $40 million of its own money into the deal. I would put that up against 99% of the management teams out there. Who have very little, if any, skin in the game. And that's a problem that Rick Rule has talked about many times, that lack of alignment, that lack of ownership. And we're owners, we're principals. And when we started the process, we were a shell with a few million dollars in cash, and there were 34 other companies in round one. So we had a 3% chance of winning. When CIBC, who was running the process, or Barrick, talked to us, they said, "How are you guys going to raise this money?" And that's where Orion and Wheaton were such great partners from day one. And I would encourage anyone to build relationships with those two because they really want to try to create win-wins. And very close to both, and they've been fantastic to work with, and are great partners.
I love Rick. Rick is great. I spoke to him not too long ago, and I asked him, about his boxes, like what he looks for in companies. And one thing I do know about the companies such as yourself at the Rule Symposium is that you guys were vetted, and Rick invested in you guys. So he also said that not he doesn't have a single company that checks all the boxes. So curious as to what he likes most, and maybe not just Rick, but other investors that you met at the symposium, what gets them most excited? And then I'd love to ask where you want to be next time I see you. What do you hope
Okay.
we're talking about next time we're meet at the symposium next year?
So look, what I absolutely admire the most about Rick is he's fluent in not just how to evaluate a gold stock or a silver stock or copper stock. It's uranium, it's nickel, it's lithium. And then his knowledge and his ability to recall a transaction and the people involved is phenomenal. But what Rick has said repeatedly, and I said this in my presentation at his conference, and Rick has said this, if I just invested in my living legends, I'd be infinitely wealthier. I'd have more hair and I'd have less PTSD. So, people are massive, and I've learned that, the hard way over 2.5 decades of being in this industry. So I would say that anything that Bob Quartermain attaches his name to publicly or writes a check, Rick's probably going to say that's good enough for me. Rick would obviously do his own due diligence,
Right.
but Rick and Bob are very close.
Yeah.
So I think I got maybe the benefit of the doubt with Rick because Bob is my mentor, one of my mentors, very good friend. We co-invest in lots of stuff together. We founded a company together. So a lot of the same principles that Bob has about building a company and investing and putting the shareholder first are many of the same principles that I already had or have adopted. So I think it's the people, it's the commercial aspect, some of the people in the group have had a lot of success. I would say that the pushback has been, well, it's some people haven't built a mine before, or run a mine before, or been in this position or in that position. But I think one of the strengths of this team is that we know what we know, we know what we don't know, and everyone's helping each other and rowing in the same direction. And we've got a very aligned board. And where I'd like to be in July of 27 at Rick's conference, hopefully I see you before then. Is well on our way to filling that mill, and well on our way to have completed the hiring necessary, and maybe even looking at in the process of or completed our first transaction.
Great. Well, Jonathan, I want to disclose to our listeners that Hemlo Mining and Jonathan have not paid for this interview. I am not being this is I'm not giving investment advice. I'm not currently an investor. That may change in the future, but I just want to disclose that please do your own due diligence. And one of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Jonathan. We'll check out their website, to follow their ticker and their story. Jonathan, if you'd be so kind as to give our audience one more time your story, your website, your ticker, and how people can follow your story.
Yeah, so the ticker is HMMC on the TSX Venture Ex or sorry, the TSX Big Board. We were on the TSX Venture Exchange. We've uplisted to the TSX Big Board. We will be getting on the NYSE American in December. We needed 1 year of filings. Our website is hemlomining.com.
Awesome.
And my email address is jawdde, so JAWDE at hemlomining.com. Please reach out if you have any questions, any comments, concerns, ideas, or if you want, Jason and I to vet someone or something. I think you're in this industry long enough, you tend to become an ambassador for the industry. I want more successes. I want more of my peer group to be really, really successful and to help attract more capital, because the mining industry, it doesn't have exactly the greatest reputation amongst generalist investors. But I think the lessons learned from the last cycle, disciplined, capital allocation, I think it's in the healthiest spot it's probably ever been in. But the pipeline of development and quality development assets in the world is probably smaller than it's ever been. There's some good ones. But I would say that because there was such an under, years of underinvestment in exploration, there's been fewer discoveries that have been made.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for your time. Good to see you again. Hope to see you again soon.
Thanks very much.
All right, have a good weekend.
You too. Take care.